very windy and much colder conditions to follow the storm into early next week. Temperatures and wind chills may reach the lowest readings so far this season. Meanwhile, little change in the weather pattern is expected for the next couple of days. A low-pressure system tracking well north of the region will bring somewhat warmer air into the region for the end of the work week. This afternoon's forecast for East Central Illinois, mostly sunny and very cold with a high of 19 and the wind from the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 5. The wind will be from the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 22 and a west wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, not quite as cold, the low 12. The wind will be light and from the northwest. After midnight, the wind will be out of the southeast. Thursday, mostly cloudy and warmer, the high 32. The wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a chance for snow early. Look for a low in the mid-20s. Friday and Friday night, mostly cloudy with a high Friday in the upper 30s and a low Friday night in the mid-20s. The outlook for the weekend, depending on the temperature, we'll see rain or snow Saturday into Sunday, with colder temperatures on the way for Sunday evening and into the outset of the coming work week. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid-teens to the mid-20s. Skies were mostly sunny, although northern Indiana is seeing some lake-effect snow. In Chicago at O'Hare Airport, 19 degrees. In Bloomington, Normal, 17. Danville reported 16. Effingham, 23. And Carbondale, 26. At South Bend, light snow was reported, 24 degrees. Lafayette, 18. Indianapolis and Terre Haute, 19 degrees, and in Evansville, it was 26. At noon at Willard Airport, 17 degrees, the dew point 9. The wind was out of the northwest at 10, giving us a wind chill of 5. The relative humidity, 71%. The barometric pressure, 30.26 and steady. Skies were sunny. And at 12:39, 18 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois under sunny skies.
Hi, I'm Jeff Bossert.
I'm Tom Rogers.
I'm Celeste Quinn.
And I'm David Inge. You listen to us on WILO Radio and TV, and now we want to listen to you. Every month, we're out in the community having conversations about your hopes and challenges. What we hear impacts the programs we produce and the content we create. If you'd like us to have a community conversation in your town, give us a call at 217-333-7300 or email willconnect@illinois.edu.
On global commodity markets, coffee prices have spiked more than 50% this year. Analysts say crop shortages and growing demand from developing economies are making espressos and cappuccinos more expensive. In Hawaii, the price of a famous bean, kona, is also rising, but for a different reason. As Hawaii Public Radio's Ben Marcus reports, a destructive bug has infected the beans.
The Kona coast of the Big Island is to coffee what the Napa Valley is to wine. The elevation, combined with a moderate tropical climate and volcanic rock, help produce some amazing beans. Jason Stith is a Kona coffee grower with a young, hippie quality. He learned how to grow coffee in Latin America in the Peace Corps. The sloping acres of his peaceful farm are filled with some valuable trees.
We were finalists a couple times in the cupping contest, and so we can demand a good price for the coffee, but and we sell it all.
There's just got to be coffee to grow.
There's got to be coffee to grow and coffee to sell.
First, the farmers were hit with a damaging 2-year drought. Then, as if to add insult to injury, Stith discovered something that made him sick to his stomach. It was a tiny hole at the end of a bean where an insect had bored in. Stith pulls a branch down and picks a green coffee bean off it.
So you see that? See where he got in right there? And now there's nothing in there. It's just old, rotten bean.
He sent samples to the University of Hawaii for testing. Scientists there confirmed the worst fears of farmers and ag officials. It was coffee berry borer. Stith says about half of his crop is infested. Immediately, ag officials in Hawaii went into emergency mode. They quickly called for mandatory treatment of all beans leaving Kona for other islands. Michael Conway is an agriculture manager for Dole Food Company, which farms 150 acres of coffee on the island of Oahu. He spoke at a recent hearing in favor of mandatory treatments to protect the state's other farms.
This is the first time in my entire ag career that I've seen this type of problem come up, where an insect is contained to one area that has this potential to devastate an entire industry, and we really have to act accordingly.
My guiding principles on this are contain the coffee berry borer and then kill the coffee berry borer.
Skip Bittenbender is an agriculture specialist at the University of Hawaii. He says the treatment mandate will give him the time to devise other strategies to beat the pest. He says in the meantime, growers will have to keep their fields clean, picking up any leftover beans. They'll have to set traps and spray insecticides, some of which are still under development. Neil Reimer is with the Hawaii Department of Agriculture. He says the USDA is still investigating how the bug got here, but in the meantime, it's here, and farmers must adapt.
Now, if you're in a third world country or, you know, somewhere in South America or Central America, whatever, you can probably get by because labor is really cheap, land is cheap. Or in Hawaii, you know, you just get a small percentage reduction in yield and it could knock you under. So it's even more serious, I think, in Hawaii.
He adds that nowhere in the world has coffee berry borer been eradicated. It can only be controlled. Reimer says it's hard to know for sure what the impact of the bug will be on Kona coffee. But he says based on experience in Latin America and Africa, the insect has the potential to reduce crop yields by up to 90%. Back in Kona, Jason Stith says the drought and the coffee berry borer together have decimated this season's coffee crop.
Yeah, because it's like, well, there's this year, right? It's not looking so good.
Nor is it looking good for the hundreds of other independent farms that dot the Kona coast. And fewer beans harvested means a higher price for a cup of Kona coffee. For NPR News, I'm Ben Marcus in Honolulu.
The British painter David Hockney has an exhibition in Paris. It's an unusual one. No paint, no canvas, no paper. Hockney made this art on iPhones and iPads. NPR's Susan Stamberg says it's a 21st century show.
David Hockney thinks this is the first exhibition that was totally emailed to a gallery, the Pierre Berger Yves Saint Laurent Foundation in Paris. There, the 73-year-old artist was happy to talk about the work, but his iPhone rang.
Hello? I'm right in the middle of an interview. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I am, actually. I'll turn it off. Wait a minute.
And he did, although just before he arrived, he could have been making an artwork on it. A little vase of flowers, or a face, or a landscape, all on his iPhone. When Hockney first got the device, about 2 years ago, he immediately realized it was a new medium for creativity.
Incredible little thing, really, because it was like a sketchbook with a paint box all in one, and no cleaning up, no mess.
Because he is painting with an app called Brushes, a small virtual paint box on the phone screen, into which he dips a finger or 10 and makes pictures.
He started out sending out these images, little images that he would make on his iPhone to his friends.
Ali Tayard designed the installation of Hockney's bright and charming digital works in Paris. Ali loved getting these emails from the artist.
Most beautiful thing was when you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, just you were trying to go back to sleep, but on your computer is one of his images. That is a treat. A little flower.
Hockney started making these vibrant phone and pad works early in the morning at his home in Yorkshire, England.
From about late April to July, the sunrise would hit me in bed. If I'd have had a pencil and paper by the bed, I wouldn't have drawn a sunrise.
Black lead, white paper, not that much to get up for, really. But he had his iPhone by the bed and could draw the sunrise on the phone in color. Then the sun hit a vase of flowers near the bed. Hockney drew, painted, apped that, too, until he had made hundreds and hundreds of pictures.
Some were drawn quite quickly. Some were drawn over two or three mornings, meaning I'd go back to them. And I sent them out The lovely thing was I could send them out to my friends, and our 25 people. Often they were getting the sunrise that they'd missed. And they all said they loved receiving them.
Then he heard about the larger iPad. Hockney always carried a small sketchbook along with him. Now he carries it electronically and really gets into it.
On the iPhone, I tended to draw with my thumb, whereas the moment I got to the iPad, I found myself using every finger.
He says he sometimes gets so obsessed that when he's going in, he rubs his finger on his clothes to, like, clean his finger, as if he was using real paint.
Charlie Shipes curated the Paris show of non-paint paintings on the luminous digital screens. One wall at the gallery is hung with 20 iPhones. A second wall carries 20 iPads. The Berger Saint Laurent Foundation paid for all the devices, not Apple, they say. All the gadgets are turned on 24 hours a day. And from time to time, Hockney emails a new work to one of them, a kind of artistic update. The show closes at the end of January. Then installation designer Ali Tayar says all the art will disappear.
It's not the traditional painting. It's a luminous screen. It really doesn't exist. It's just light on a screen.
You could print a Hockney email if you were lucky enough to get one, but it would lose something in translation without that brilliant backlighting. The work only lives on these gadgets.
How do I give you my email so that I can become your friend and you will send these to me?
David Hockney smiles thinly and changes the subject, sort of.
We haven't figured out how to get paid. At the moment, it doesn't matter, but I will have to figure it out like everybody else.
Meantime, he's having fun making art with this newfangled but basically old-fashioned instrument.
Who would have thought the telephone would bring back drawing?
He likes that, as do loads of other artists who are bringing back drawing this way, making works on digital devices. Curator Charlie Shipes says David Hockney has always been forward-looking. Years ago, he made collages with Polaroid pictures and used home copying machines for other works. This new phase, Shipes thinks, is just the logical next step, but a big step artistically.
These things are all about surfaces. It's all about mark making. That's what the iPad and the iPhone, these drawings, they may be small physically, but they're big and important in terms of his total oeuvre. And he thinks that this medium is going to change the world.
The show at the Pierre Berger Yves Saint Laurent Foundation in Paris is called Fresh Flowers, a bouquet of digital drawings from a master. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
WILO programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chocolate.